other parts. But we are having part two of a webcast that we've entitled Six Continents of Innovation. And we had a great conversation 2 hours ago. And in this conversation, we've invited three esteemed guests to talk about corporate innovation and how it gets done in North America, South America, and Africa. So we'll introduce our guests in a minute. Certainly as context, and we've got a question we're asking people ahead of time. So if you want to answer our advanced poll about the biggest influence behind your region's success with innovation, and we've got eight different choices. So we'll give you a couple minutes there. But the first webcast that myself and Andrea had done, we actually opened it up to the crowd and said, look, what do you want to hear about? And what rose to the top was actually this topic. So so we listened to the people, and we are we'll let that question go for a little bit longer. As a backdrop, and I know there may be some flat earthers out there, but truly when it comes to corporate innovation, the world is not flat. We sometimes can be in our little from Canada, but even on the first hour of discussion we've had, we start to recognize how innovation is viewed at very differently around the world. And just as one kind of further kind of context, as much as you can probably dip into these four or five different areas of innovation, startup innovation, social innovation, public innovation, even ecosystem innovation, our core focus of this webcast and what myself and Andrea do ongoing is corporate innovation. So we've asked our peers to come to the table with the best foresights they have about that. So I want to introduce my co-host, Andrea Cates, and as well my trusty webinar producer, Joanne Lecmuel, will be serving you up today, and hopefully we'll have 40 minutes of awesome conversation. Andrea, on mute?
Oh, no, I'm not on mute. Sorry. I was just wanting to say good morning and excited about this. Yeah, as Sean said, we just had a really great set of insights around Asia. We talked about all kinds of news from Europe, including the new election this morning, the new announcement of leadership this morning, and really interested to hear about what's happening in Latin America, what's happening in Africa, and the perspectives on North America outside of the Silicon Valley bubble and inside. So yeah, excited about all of the conversation today.
And since we do have a few wise-looking heads in the corner of your screen, we should probably introduce them at this point. Starting in no particular listener of Chanzo Capital, and I believe it's out of Accra in Ghana, but I'm not too sure. Is it, Eric? Just tell me where you are today.
Well, I'm out of Accra, Ghana, but I'm currently in Newport, Rhode Island. So that's where I'm calling in from, but I'm based in Accra, Ghana.
Gotcha.
Which is in West Africa.
Welcome aboard. And so today, so this is not a competition, so there will be no wagering. I also want to introduce Brian Arger. He's founder of Inside Outside IO. He's also a director of innovation at Nelnet. He's steeped in corporate innovation, and I thought there's no better person in North America to provide some perspective around the full gamut of what's going on in both Canada, US, Mexico, and a few other places. Say hi, Brian.
Hey, Sean and team, everybody. Nice to see you.
And hailing from Lincoln, Nebraska today, correct?
I'm actually in Florida today, but yes, normally in Nebraska.
Okay, nobody is where they really usually are today, right? So, and Brian was kind enough to have me on his podcast, so I thought we
had to make moves to be the right location for the webinar.
Exactly. And then lastly, and it's funny, I just got coaching in terms of pronunciation, so I hope I get this right. It's Marcella Rueda, deputy director from Connect Bogota. She spent over a decade in leadership roles around innovation, both in public innovation and in tech transfer, open innovation, and a whole assortment of different things. And she's tasked with the idea of getting Bogota to be if not the top, certainly the top three kind of innovation capital of Latin America. So say hi.
Hi, yes, I'm here sitting, and it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Wonderful. All right. And obviously myself and Andrew are here in Silicon Valley today. Maybe we'll show the results of the poll question that we provided. And obviously we have not filled the ballot box here. So maybe I'll just throw it over, open to my panelists. Quickies here. What would we have voted for? The biggest influence behind your region's success with innovation. You only get to choose one. Let's start with Eric. What's your thought here in terms of what you're seeing on the screen?
Number two, cultural and demographic factors. Because as you know, Africa has a very used to demographic, and basically the youth have taken to technology and are basically creating some of the most amazing apps that are solving local problems. And that is sort of the foundation of the innovation that we're seeing across Africa. And that's what we're investing in, helping them out.
Yeah, I mean, we were just talking in our previous webcast. There's a vote at the end where we all vote in terms of what we think is going to be the region that has the best growth over the next decade through innovation. And Africa was either our number one or number two choice. And a lot of it has to do with, I think, a culture of not having a legacy of innovation. So you can create all new stuff, right?
Correct. As you say, necessity is the matter of invention, right? So the most necessity is in Africa. So not only is the necessity factor, but also the demographic dividends on the side of Africa. Some of the interesting statistics is that in the next 2 decades, Africa is going to quadruple its population. So one in every 4 person is going to be African within the next 2 decades. Now, within that bracket, below 70% of that is below 25 years. So it's a very youthful demographic that Africa is going to have. And it's interesting to see the paradigm shift that has happened just between my generation and the current generation, where the youth have just taken to, you know, the culture of innovation and building solutions to problems, basically taking their destiny into their own hands, right? As opposed to sitting around and waiting for who's going to help them, right? Or continent and go to a better place. Like, you know, when I was in school, one of the interesting phenomena, most of my colleagues after school will leave to the US or to Europe and just get a job and work in corporate. That has changed just generation after us, where a lot of the youth are basically taking to innovation, taking to solving problems, taking to starting companies and through entrepreneurship. And my first company that I invested in was two guys out of college who actually came to a business plan competition I organized in 2002, 2003. And they said it was there that they discovered that they were going to be entrepreneurs. So instead of leaving after their final year in school, they decided to stay in Ghana and started a company that was then called SMSGH, which was SMS services, messaging services. The company is now rebranded to Haptel. And that company is very successful. It's grown into 4 countries and last year netted 20 million US. But these are two guys out of college in 2005. And all the education was in Ghana.
I love the specific examples on that. And it really does feel like there's a rising tide there. I'll quickly go over, because this was really meant to be kind of a quick hitter in terms of kind of where you thought your region's strength lays. Marcella, where do you think South America and I guess Colombia's kind of biggest contributor to innovation is going to be?
I think marketplace and customer factors. The marketplace is changing very rapidly. It's becoming similar to what's happening in other parts of the world, very consumer oriented, very tailored to each consumer. We are becoming more sophisticated in what our needs are and what we want from our products and services, and we're seeing examples of that throughout basically all industries, especially commerce and fintech as well. So I think it's a changing marketplace, and it's definitely more consumer centric.
Very good. And Brian, from a North American perspective, you want to weigh in here?
Yeah, I think when you think about North America, I think a lot of people would jump to the conclusion that it would be technology or capital being the driving forces to success. But I'm on the same path as Marcella there. I think the companies that are doing the best job in corporate innovation are really focused on that marketplace and understanding customer needs, customer problems, and focusing their innovations around that, and then building from that. And obviously leveraging capital, leveraging technology to make that happen. But the true winners, I think, are going to be the ones that are marketplace oriented.
Interesting. You know, it's funny that the more we talk about innovation in any of our webcasts, the more it revolves around a focus around people, whether it's culture, customer, whatever, and less about maybe the technology and the products that we produce. So I'm going to set just a little bit further backdrop, and then we'll get into five or six questions that we would love to slug it out on. You know, I certainly... caught a few different headlines, you know, American inventors are about to enter a golden age. It just won't be in the US. Had some interesting steerage around the fact that, you know, this has truly become a global world where American inventors are going elsewhere now, which historically hasn't been the case. Is innovation possible in Latin America? And it talked about some of the challenges, but also some of the new changes going on within Latin and South America, and then why Africa has the ability to leapfrog the rest of the world with innovation. Forbes always loves its saucy headlines, so that one might stroke the cockles of your heart there, Eric.
Absolutely. And if you want me to jump to it, so sort of building on a little bit of the data points that I gave earlier, the other important factor here for Africa beyond the demographics is also the opportunity to create jobs, that the labor force of the world is going to come from Africa. That also tilts into the first argument that the first point that American inventors are moving out of Silicon Valley, partly because Silicon Valley has become too expensive, is becoming, you know, the other factors that are making it difficult for inventors to operate out of Silicon Valley. So new technopoles like Africa, even the North Africa and the Middle East are becoming also very interesting. Actually, one of my friend entrepreneurs who has a startup in Silicon Valley moved to Morocco because for a lot of other reasons, but part of it was that she saw the future of a company in Africa and she said, I want to start dipping my toes and so move to Morocco. One of my startups that I invested in the US, Ampit, we're currently setting up the Africa operations. Part of the reason I invested in that company was that the technology and the platform was going to be relevant in Africa. So we're in the process now of launching that in Africa. Then that speaks a little bit on the corporate side. So we're working with the big telcos to provide data, a video platform, a content play that basically pushes their video consumption. So there is sort of the two ways, sort of the bottom-up innovations that are really coming out of Africa, and then also Africa becoming a marketplace for global innovation to expand into.
Very cool. I thought as well, just because sometimes even myself can get kind of in the tire tracks of just what is my regular world operating out of Toronto, and I thought I'd share a couple of different database points. We looked at all six regions and kind of Edelman has a really cool study that they do called the Trust Barometer, and just how differently not only is it between different regions, certainly if I look at South America, there seems to be some span between Colombia and Argentina in terms of satisfaction with business. We see it a little bit in the U.S., strangely, Brian, in terms of Mexico having maybe a healthier relationship with business than U.S. and Canada. And then from a African standpoint, they only had South Africa as a data point on it, but it kind of fell more in the range of North America. So I don't know, Marcella, maybe just chime in. Faith in business and trust in doing the right thing and doing stuff for the future. Yes, no, indifferent?
No, you know, I think we're still looking elsewhere. We look outside a lot. You know, we often don't trust our own capacities. We've had governments that haven't really led the way and haven't had policies that enable, or not enable, but that help corporate innovation. So there hasn't been huge investment from the government side, and there's a huge issue in general around corruption. So that makes trust in business, difficult. It's hard to generalize because Latin America has 20 or 22 countries, depending how you look at it. But, certainly the scandals in Brazil, in Argentina, in Mexico, in Colombia, that has an impact on the trust in business. It kind of, as elections come up, then you start seeing the trust come back, right? So I would say that that's generally, one of the downsides of doing business in Latin America.
And I have a follow-up. I know years ago, I was trying to remember how many years ago we worked together in the first time. Was it about 8, maybe?
7.
Yeah. 7, but it was a really different time politically. And we were talking last time and were really interested in the relationship when there's a regulatory environment, there's a business environment, there's, as you were saying, corruption can come from the government, corruption can come from business. We were talking in Denmark about the Danske Bank scandal, money laundering, and what does that do to really erode trust in general? So I was wondering if you would do a follow-up, Marcela, in terms of what's changed. Is there more trust in business than there was when we first met, or is there less? And what do you attribute it to?
It's certainly in Colombia, there is more trust at the moment. We just had elections last year, got a new president starting this year, and he, has certainly given a lot of confidence to businesses. He's supporting businesses. He's putting in place the correct laws. I think that's also happened in Mexico. Especially in fintech, there's been some very interesting laws that have passed. So that certainly has changed in many countries. And if you look at the predictions for economic growth in Latin America for 2019, really it's around 2.7% overall, with countries like Colombia being over, over 3%, Dominican Republic being over 4% growth, which is looking very, very attractive. There's a few countries such as Argentina that aren't doing so well. And then we have the huge problem with Venezuela, which is looking at a growth of minus 1.5 or minus 2% next year. And there's also the problem with migration from Venezuela. Colombia alone has received over 1 million, probably close to 1.2 million people from Venezuela, and that has a huge impact. So, I think governments have so many pressing issues that, they focus on the business culture, and then, things like this happen and it kind of turns things a bit pear-shaped for a little while. But overall, all of our countries are democratic countries, and, I think there's been reasonable stability over the years.
I'm going to move on to just one further slide before we get into some of the direct questions. I'm not too sure if everybody knows the 21 cities on this list, but this was kind of the top 7 innovative cities from a To Think Now survey that gets done, I think, every year. Maybe I'll throw this one over to Brian, because it was funny. I was reading an Economist article last week about how Texas practices innovation versus California, and just the structure, the philosophy, just the very basics of how entrepreneurs think about the world are quite different between those two places, never mind maybe the 7 that are on here. Is North America kind of one of these splintered innovation worlds that probably could slice up a number of different ways because they're so different in amongst themselves?
Absolutely. I think a large portion, I'm based in the Midwest. I think how entrepreneurs approach building startups in the Midwest versus in the Valley or in some of the tech hubs is significantly different. If you look at the access to capital, that alone makes things significantly different. So from the standpoint of companies looking to raise their seed rounds and things like that, they don't have that access. And so they have to find customers first. And so we're seeing a lot more kind of corporate partnerships and corporate startup collaboration opportunities, whether it's new co-creation venture types of things that we're seeing. We're seeing more community involvement in helping startups kind of get created and then build innovation connections through that. But I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that, you know, lack of capital forces you to get business models quickly to find customers and that. And I think that's a good thing. But it definitely is a different way to look at it versus, you know, if you go to the Valley, there's quite a bit of seed capital, quite a bit of opportunities to get some ideas off the ground. And people are used to that churn of innovation and that they're willing to take more risks. If you start a business in the Valley and it fails, you can quickly get back in line at the coffee shop and get on your next startup, where the opportunities in a place like Omaha or a place like Nashville may be different. It's just looked at differently.
I'll ask a provocative question, and at the risk of
you broke up there, I didn't hear you.
Are Silicon Valley's days numbered? are we seeing a empire of innovation?
Well, my friend Steve Case has this Rise of the Rest initiative, where they've been making the case that there's too much concentration of capital and resources on the two coasts, whilst that is not representative of the innovation across the U.S. In other words, there is innovation. Talent is universal, but opportunity is not. And now, why are we concentrating opportunity on the two coasts? So he's got a new fund around this. He's been on the bus traveling the U.S. and, you know, basically going to the Midwest and other places and trying to, you know, invest in companies, but also pushing for that. And I'll relate that to Africa a little bit. And on the Africa list there, you see that these are very interesting cities that are really in the forefront of innovation. We ourselves have a classification that we use. We focus on what we call the King's Countries, which was a term I coined 5 years ago, which is Kenya, Ivory Coast, Nigeria, Ghana, and South Africa. And their capital cities were mainly the innovation hotspots. We termed that NALAJ, which was NALAJ. But over the last 5 years, we've seen this concept evolve. Where recently I was having a chat with some friends, and I said a new acronym is KingsMe, which is that beyond Kenya, Ivory Coast, Nigeria, Ghana, and South Africa, we have countries like Senegal, for example, becoming a very Dakar becoming an innovation hotspot. We have Morocco, Casablanca. I see Casablanca on the list. Also emerged very strongly in the last 5 years, and also Egypt, Cairo, also emerging strongly as an innovation destination around Africa. So part of the concept behind the King's acronym was to sort of throw a challenge to the rest of the continent. These countries are leading the digitalization of the economies around of the digitization of the economies, and so other countries in there to kind of follow suit, which is kind of a bit contrarian to what you see the United States. I don't know, maybe it's different in Colombia, maybe Marcelo.
Well, it's a great question. We're actually going on September 23rd, we're meeting Andrea with a group of Colombian leaders from universities and industry to Silicon Valley. And, you know, we're going to be visiting the whole ecosystem. We're going to be meeting with startups, with universities, with corporates. And I think Silicon Valley is a very unique place because of the culture. It's difficult to replicate. There are certainly ecosystems that are getting stronger. But I remember the first time I went to the Valley about 10 years ago. My big takeaway when I came back was, you know, the concept of paying it forward, and really that culture of collaboration between people, and everyone has opened their doors to the group, that they're willing to share their knowledge. And those type of cultural assets take a really long time to build. You know, the horizontal organizations, the talent with the universities, university corporate collaboration is very difficult, and it seems to be working in that part of the world, and not only there, but certainly stronger with universities like Berkeley and Stanford. And, you know, I don't think we're quite there yet in other places. And, you know, trying to replicate that culture or, you know, adapt it to our own certainly takes time. And you know, there's no right recipe, but I don't think Silicon Valley's days are quite yet over.
Yeah, being provocative there, Andrew is going to reach through the screen and strangle me for asking that one. But
well, Sean, if you may, like I want to take this opportunity to make like a sort of a bold claim, and this is on the back of what I call the global temperature of innovation, right? So in the last century, we saw it in Asia. Before that, we saw it in Europe. And I believe that in this century, we are seeing the most innovation is going to come from Africa, right? So it's just sort of, it's almost like this wave is moving around the globe and it's sort of now sort of settled up in Africa, because what has been happening in Africa in the last decade and a little over is quite unusual, which wasn't the case before. And the way Africa segues into this is also quite unique in the sense that the continent is predominantly a mobile web continent. In other words, most people see the internet through the mobile phone, which is also kind of a very different variation from how the rest of the world connects. I presume this is the same in Latin America and also predominantly in the global south, where the mobile phone is a computer and not necessarily just a device for talking, right? I mean, I have, you know, engineers, developers that write code on their phone. I mean, that tiny screen, these guys are writing complex codes on the phone, and it's just incredible to witness that kind of development, which wasn't the case just a decade ago. Right? So we really believe that we're going to see more of such innovations coming out. Like, you know, combining that with the fact that there's a lot of necessity in Africa just puts it at a different level. Andrea, you have it.
Yeah, well, so I'm going to build on that, because I was just talking in Copenhagen, and I know we crossed paths, we missed each other by about a week there. But it was really interesting because the topic that I was supposed to do the keynote on was big tech platform, you know, big tech versus fintech, you know, where's the power going to come? And it was supposed to be sort of Alibaba, Tencent, Baidu, Microsoft, Facebook, Google, and I'm missing somebody. Or these fintech, you know, like the large banks, or kind of who's going to win. And it was very clear that you have to bring up something like M-Pesa, you know, that the innovation, even in fintech, might be likely coming from the mobile industry or some other industry. So that whereas the dominant strategic advantage was infrastructure in the last decades, now the dominant strength might be the ability to be nimble with regards to the mobile interface. And so M-Pesa is just as good an example as Baidu, Alibaba, or Facebook, or Google, or Microsoft, as far as big players that could really set the stage for what's coming. So I think this notion of what Eric's saying is probably very rich in possibility, you know, that you have to sort of look at which core technology drivers really matter in the next waves. And, you know, I'm not voting yet, because at the end we'll vote, but I did get a point for Africa in that last conversation. So thank you for that one, Eric.
Yeah, sure. And actually, internally within Chanzo, we actually now been talking about this new concept we call the second generation innovation, right? So stuff, the layer that sits on top of mobile money. So we now see mobile money as an infrastructure for payments, right? The same way credit and debit cards are kind of an infrastructure for payment in the US. In Africa, it's mobile money, right? So in Africa, your money is on the phone. In the US, your money is on the card, right? And Now we're seeing that a second generation of innovation that layers on top of that. So we invested in a company in Kenya called FinAccess. And what these guys do is they basically use your mobile money activity to build a credit history. And then the credit score from that history, and then based on that, they're able to provide lending, right? Now, this is a very unorthodox way of building credit history based on you know, your mobile money activity. But it's basically, I mean, this platform is making 98% repayments. Unusual, the default rate. I mean,
and I'll say one last thing, and then we'll turn it back over to Marcel and Brian. But my last thing on this, and you know, I'll go back to you, Sean, is I had this really interesting experience. We're doing a project, as you know, in China. And one of the projects that was so interesting is that, you know, the mental model. So these are people who have not had checking accounts as children, have not had banks physically, have not had vaults. So even the mental model of what it means to transfer payments is completely different from place to place. So I would love to hear about that from Marcela and Brian as well. You know, how the mental models around some of these innovations actually, you know, in some ways free you up for a new model.
Yeah, I'll jump in. So I think a lot of different things are happening, obviously, in the fintech space. You've got the entrenched banks, et cetera, are trying to understand this. And then you've got players like Facebook that are trying to, you know, come up with Libra and new ways to think about distributed currencies and formats from that perspective. So I think that U.S. is falling behind in certain aspects of it, but I do believe that they totally understand what's happening in Asia and Africa and these new models that are being tested out there. And they're trying to adapt them to kind of how do you evolve rather than completely disrupt what you have there in the existing systems right now. So
actually, an example is Stripe. Stripe is built on mobile money.
Yeah.
So totally.
And Apple Pay, there's a lot of different players that are playing out in that particular area. So it'd be interesting to see how, you know, access to consumers and access to that particular market has with the ability for adoption. And, you know, it's those use case scenarios that are really going to make for success. You know, people have to use it. They've got to be, they've got to trust it. They've got to have some use case scenarios that are different than what they're currently used to.
So Marcela, I'm interested in the same thing from your perspective, because once again, it's so interesting. We take so much for granted that everybody had a checkbook, everybody had a bank, and that we're trying to, you know, get people off of that. But I remember in Mexico, we did a project with Telmex, and it was a last mile project. And it was like, how are we going to get people to hook up their phones with the last mile in Mexico? And then suddenly it's like, forget it. We don't even need it. We've got mobile, you know, so there are ways that I'm sure you observe a completely different mental model that might open the door for innovation.
Yeah, there's certainly many opportunities, especially as you guys are mentioning financial services. And you know, I was thinking about what Brian was saying, and I'm not too sure that, you know, those global banks are actually getting it quite as much as the local ones in terms of innovation in fintech. And I hadn't thought about that, but as you know, 50% of Latin America is, you know, has no access to any banking services at all, right? There's regions where, you know, 90% of all transactions are done in cash. The lady that works at my home and helps me with my kids, she just won a motorcycle in a raffle for, I think it was valued at $3,000 or something like that, right? So she received the money, cash, so we sold it, we helped her sell it, and now she has a $3,000 under her mattress at home. I cannot get her to open a bank account because that's like, you know, the enemy. So she's, you know, she says, you know, that's fine, you know, I'll just keep it here under my mattress. You know, who's going to come here anyway? Why should I pay someone to keep my money? They might take, you know, $10 away a year, which is and I'm just fascinated by this whole
we should do mobile money.
Yes, and that's coming in very, very strongly.
Do you think there's a larger problem? There's a greater probability that you put the money on the phone as opposed to put it in a bank. What's the probability between those two?
Yes. So we have a new. It's not new, and it's not a startup anymore. But Rappi. I don't know if you've heard about that. That's one of the 19 unicorns in Latin America. Basically, it's a platform, a go-to everything platform. So basically, it's a platform for favors. So you can get anything delivered at home. You know, from the supermarket. You can ask for any favor. Like you can say, you know, I've got my children's birthday party and I forgot to hire some clowns. Can you please bring some clowns? And they'll bring you clowns. I mean, this is a real life example. you can get money from them. So you say, oh, you know, I forgot to pay my bill. Can you bring me $200? And they'll bring you the $200. You don't even have to go to the ATM anymore. They just received a huge investment from SoftBank. And in 5 years, or I think they started in 2015. So in 8 or 9 years, they're now in 8 or 9 countries. And now they're using this platform exactly as Eric was saying, for all, you know, financial transactions. So you exchange money and points through Rappi, and you know, people like this lady I'm speaking to you about are now using Rappi as their trusted go-to platform for all transactions. So definitely, you know, local players, local banks, local startups are really getting that they've got to have an online offline model that adapts to very particular needs that are probably similar to those in Africa, but there's certainly opportunities there to be explored.
Yeah. So Sean, do you want to go back to asking some other topical questions and sharing some of the other insights?
Yeah, I mean, I think what maybe I'll ask to queue up this question. I think we covered off to our first two questions pretty adequately overall to begin with. But the question being posed, is it easier or tougher to do business in your region than a decade ago? We'll quickly go through a panelist with a easier, same, tougher, or really. What's your thought?
Yes,
sure, go ahead.
I'll just say from North American perspective, I've got to say it's easier. It's different. there's so many different things you've got to now play against, and disruption is coming from so many different angles, whether it's technology or access to markets, et cetera. But I think overall, your ability as a startup or as a corporate innovator to spin up experiments, try new things, create and build stuff has never been easier.
And from an African perspective, I think that it's much more easier. Like you said, well, this entrepreneur didn't exist before. So this is a very new phenomenon. And part of it is that the barrier to entry is reduced significantly. Right? So it's software, it's brain power. And I think that the third factor is that the general business climate in Africa is changing rapidly. I mean, a lot of countries now have better political stability, economic growth. I mean, if you take the King's countries, you know, Ghana, you know, had a recession, but it's sort of picked up again. So if you look at the global map now, Ghana is the fastest growing economy in the world at, I think, 8.8%, according to the IMF. And the current leadership is really creating an enabling environment for business on the corporate side. And also on the SME side, you know, the government is driving this sort of industrial light manufacturing agenda, which is around industrialization. And I think also that the third factor is on how agriculture is being modernized and technology is becoming a critical part of that. We invest, one of our portfolio companies is a company called PharmaLine. And PharmaLine basically helps farmers with access to information, access to market and market services using their phone. And they speak to the phone in a local dialect and basically just transcribes and gives them the information. So you overcome the literacy barrier right there. And in most African countries and in most, developing countries, farming is a subsistence exercise. It's not commercial farming like you see in the US, right? So it's very smallholder farmers, family-based, small cultivation, but they operate in, they do this in cooperatives, right? So if you can get the cooperative, then you can get the numbers. So that's what PharmaLine does. So this sort of is really making even the farmer become smart, you know, using the phone that they have in their hand.
Excellent. Yes, and from my perspective, I think not only is it easier, but it's much more fun because, you know, I've seen all these collaboration projects happening from, you know, Mexico to Brazil, you know, especially in our region, collaboration with startups more than with universities, but I've seen a lot of open innovation challenges. We just recently ran one with the port of Cartagena, which is the largest port in Latin America after Miami, because we consider, you know, the largest port in Latin America to be Miami, and they were looking for logistics solutions, and we looked in many countries. We tapped into 450 startups, had 150 applications, and at the end chose six logistics solutions that were, you know, all very interesting and are being accelerated, and there's a process ongoing with them. We had another one for the National Coffee Federation. We had solutions from 19 countries, and that's why I say it's so much fun. You know, we had solutions from Germany, from Spain, from New Zealand, you know, from Asia. In the end, there were three chosen ones, one from Spain, from Germany, and a Colombian one. So I think tapping into that global brain now is making innovation certainly easier than developing it all in-house or only with local talent.
I guess the consensus amongst our panel, and I guess we've got an even split amongst the poll coming in, but it seems like our panel believes it's easier, but maybe in the fact that it's becoming easier, it's becoming tougher because now everybody can do it, right? So if you look at it from a world lens, you've got a much bigger, and certainly from a corporate lens, you've got a much bigger palette of competitors that might be trying to take your breakfast away.
Well, I also think that part of it is like also having people solving tougher problems, which I think is very important because from where we sit, like we really believe also in that solving tougher challenges means that you can make impact, but also you can make great returns. So Shanzo, one of the things that we want to prove with the company that we invest in is that you don't need to sacrifice returns to make impact. We really believe that you can do good and do well at the same time. And part of it is being very, you know, conscientious about the problems you solve and how you develop business models that solve those problems and make returns at the same time.
Yeah, it seems to be a stripe of nearly everything that we've looked at in the space where it's like having kind of triple bottom line, purposeful type of stuff. It's no longer just lip service. It's actually kind of table stakes for doing business in 2020. I put this up from one of our study reports or corporate innovation playbook. Here are four of the biggest external innovation challenges. So we just mentioned it got easier. Part of the reasons why it may have got tougher is the speed, technology, and how to keep up with it. The legals and the regulatory barriers that come along with all of it. And we're seeing some of that now within tech finally. And then just demanding customers. You put something in front of somebody and they can now get it in blue. They're always going to want it in blue now, right? So a lot of different challenges. I'll turn it over to you from a regional standpoint. What is the biggest innovation barrier that still afflicts each one of your regions? And maybe we'll start from the top. Marcello, what's the biggest thing that is the block that you need to take away?
I think they're all challenges across the board. And I think probably speed, you know, the marketplace is the biggest challenge. You know, you guys are all aware of the valuation of Uber last year was, I think it was $120 billion. And then this year it came down. I mean, it's not a bad amount, but to $75 billion. And Lyft had a 25% fall in their share price in just a few months. And you know, it just makes you wonder, you know, are these disruptors being able to stay as disruptors, as innovators for a really long time, or are they gonna be replaced very quickly? And, you know, here in Colombia, we have huge traffic issues, right? So it's a very, very busy city, Bogota, where I'm from. There was a company that was founded by Rappi, and they have these scooters that take you everywhere, and they charge you by the minute or by distance. So there's 4 months ago, I'd see, you know, the odd scooter going around. And now there's four companies that offer scooters. Right at my door, as soon as I walk out of my door, the park in front of us has three of those companies setting up their scooters there at 5 a.m. And, you know, it's just really scary to think, you know, these guys put up this business that was very successful 4 months ago, right? Yeah. And now they're, you know, I'm sure they're still successful, but there's four. And I'm afraid that in two or three more months, there's going to be eight. And that's going to be the preferred alternative for transportation in short distances. So I think the marketplace is moving at huge, huge speeds, and the investment in technology is very high. So I think that's probably the biggest barrier in my perspective.
And I'll echo that from the speed perspective, but I think it's a lot has to do with the internal cultural issues that happen. I work with a lot of corporations, and the biggest thing I hear is we cannot move fast enough. We can't get our you know, meetings set up. We can't figure out how to move as fast as these startups are moving. And so it's a cultural issue. Like, how do you create this culture of experimentation and this ability to understand what you're going to do, take an action on it, learn, and then reiterate and go through that particular process. So that speed, it's not only the marketplace and the technology is changing, but it's a corporate's own ability and culture to take advantage of that speed or to move at the speed of change. That was a big factor.
Brian, one of the things that our community loves is specific examples. And once again, we don't want you to share anything proprietary, but we love examples of how you've worked successfully to bring innovation to either a project or a corporate setting. Have you learned any tricks of the trade in terms of these obstacles and these concerns and issues?
Yeah, so one of the things that we've seen that has helped corporations understand this need for speed is to put them in proximity to startups. So not necessarily corporate innovation labs where it's only just their own corporate ideas going through the lab, but having them paired with startups that are going through Accelerator or something along those lines, that they can see firsthand how early stage companies are moving and making decisions. If nothing else, it gives them a light bulb moment of, oh, we need to do something differently. We can't go through the normal process of consensus buy-in and all this kind of stuff that you do internally with an existing business model to actually move faster than you can before. So that's one example. Another example, I think, is providing access to top leadership to having conversations with founders and other disruptive companies out there. There's programs out there. There's a company called Generator who runs an accelerator out of Madison, and they have a group called Project North, which enables corporate innovators to kind of sign on as a membership deal. And then Generator takes us to different particular cities, kind of gives startup tourism, gives us access to what's going on in particular innovation ecosystems. And if, again, it gives you access to speed of learning and speed of network, which I think helps corporations move faster in the long term.
Well, not to try to make everything all about future-proofing Next at all, but it is interesting that, you know, one of the pillars that we've observed from the perspective where Sean and Andrea sit is always about, you know, seeing differently and also then learning faster and learning new things, because sometimes people get right into innovation without realizing that, oh, wait, what is AI? I actually have to like learn something different, or, you know, seeing this is a really important step, and really interesting to hear that. I also think that having worked in agile software and knowing that teaming and pairing is so important for those ahas, for the projects to move better, you know, you have people sitting side by side and sort of experiencing agile together. I had never thought about it from sort of just an agile decision-making process or an agile perspective gaining process or an agile consensus building process, where you also, as you said, put people in proximity to make all of those other aspects of innovation work well. I had thought about it from agile software, but that's a really big, interesting, big idea.
I'm curious to know your regional innovation barrier, because particularly interesting, I read an article recently where it's like, for the first time, companies that are African-based companies are starting to work across borders, which, I mean, 20 years ago would not have been seen. Is that still a barrier in terms of how do I operate across that acronym that you had mentioned in terms of all those countries? Are there still gaps there in terms of having to overcome?
Yeah, so the Keynes countries, which is Kenya, Ivory Coast, Nigeria, Ghana, and South Africa, and I indicated that we've upgraded it to Keynes ME with Senegal, Morocco, and Egypt. I mean, the the regulatory, I was going to say the regulatory policies for me is the challenge in Africa that is holding back innovation, right? So one is not only is public policy waking up to this reality, but also that you have regulatory challenges. I'll give you an example. So there's a guy that, you know, I think 8 years ago came to me, sorry, 7 years ago came to me and had this Bitcoin idea. And basically what he was doing was using Bitcoin for remittance. In other words, if you want to send money to Ghana, they'll give you Bitcoins and then remit the cash locally. So I made a small investment and started working with this guy. And I said, okay, well, it looks like, you know, we looked through the regulations and we didn't need to have a license. But I thought, look, let's make the central bank aware of what we're doing, just, you know, for compliance purposes, and also that we don't become an avenue for money laundering or things like that. You know, it wasn't doing big transactions, it was very small amounts. So I was thinking that it could be a positive development, and the central bank will maybe work with us to create some framework to make this work. Right after our first meeting, they sent us a letter and the guy took off to shut us down. Oh, we're coming after you. And the entrepreneur, I still haven't seen that entrepreneur till now. The guy just got scared and took off, which is quite unfortunate, because if you take M-Pesa, for example, in Kenya, the reason M-Pesa worked was that somebody in the central bank said, let's allow this to take a life of its own, right? And today it's really changed the Kenyan economy. So I think that, you know, I mean, if you take other places where innovation is a big deal today, you have a very strong public policy support. I mean, you take Israel, where the government was actively involved in shaping innovation, in supporting early stage funds, you know, matching their investment, creating tax incentives that, you know, attracted entrepreneurs, giving them tax breaks in the early days of starting a company and things like that. They're really, really important. But you're not seeing them here, but then you're also seeing the regulatory barriers. And the cross-border issues are even more imminent, but it's changing. I mean, our current fund focus is purely on cross-border, right? So we want to blind this whole, colonial barriers that were created on Africa, which wasn't the case before. So this current fund is called, it's a growth fund that we want to take companies from one country and grow them into multiple countries. It's not an easy task. It's hard, because the reality is that these Kings Meet countries look very similar. In detail, they are very different. But also that's what it takes to sort of create, multinational businesses. It's right. But you got to understand the cultural context of how business works in these markets. And that becomes the determinant of success, not necessarily because you have the capital or you have the best product, right? But you understand the context of how things work there. And that is that we think that it's going to really create the growth opportunity that most of these businesses need.
All right, we are in the last, and that was really salient points, I think, for anybody that's doing business in Africa. We're in the last glimmers of our hour together here. So I am going to play police person here. It's like you get super passionate people, and obviously we want to talk about it. But now it's just like I need an answer, and I need a one sentence reason why on this stuff. Okay, so we got the idea, guys. What's your answer? What's your one sentence idea? We've come up with four leading disrupted industries. You're seeing them here. For your region, you can pick one of these or go off the board. Which one over the next 5 years are you most interested in from a shifts and trends that are probably positively swaying in one of these directions? And we'll start from the top, Marcel, from a South American perspective.
It's hard. I would say banking and finance in most countries, but we're also a very biodiverse region. We've got 6 of 10 most biodiverse countries in the world. So they're, you know, all industries around bio, cosmetics,
I'll count that as one sentence with a big comma in it, and you went for 1.5, but that's allowable. I'll have to police this better for the future. But Brian, from a North American standpoint,
I'm going to go with banks, insurance, because I think insurance is going to have a big effect on the healthcare system in North America as well. So that's my answer.
Okay. Well done, and no comma either. So everybody's got this so far. Eric, what's your thought in Africa?
Fintech, retail and e-commerce, and education and learning, we are in those spaces, but healthcare is really going to surge in soon.
That's the one. Okay. Nice. All right. Moving on to the next one. Top emerging technologies. We chose four off of the top of our list: AI and automation and machine learning, Internet of Things, including all the connected cars stuff and smart cities, blockchain and all the decentralization, and mobile, social, and the next billion. We'll start from Eric. You go first this time. Which one?
Mobile, social, and the next billion, and smart cities, connected cars. Then all right, I'm gonna AI and decentralization.
I'm going to have to police these two choices soon, but you're all very nice people, so don't want to. Brian, what's your thought here from a North American standpoint?
I'll go with AI, machine learning.
Yep. And then Marcel?
So will I. AI, machine learning, and automation.
Wow, now nobody wants to give a reason anymore because I've just completely truncated their answers. We also looked at the attractive business models of the future. This is the last question. Leading mega trends that are going to really shift and change things within your own region. We'll start with Brian first this time. We got all the co-creation stuff. We got the, I guess, blockchain being the center point for it, but there's a whole kind of strident kind of trend toward decentralizing data and intelligence, trust, and polarization. Which one's going to drive your innovation forward most?
I'm going to go back to data and intelligence because I think it'll have impact on all the other areas.
Interesting. Eric?
Co-creation, peer-to-peer, and sharing because Africa is a community-based place. So
nice. And Marcel?
Data and intelligence. Still early days. We're still trialing, but that's going to be the next trend here.
I'm going to skip over that one because we don't have time. This is where I want you to get on a soapbox and go, give me your biggest regional innovation prediction. We're sitting here 5 years from now having the exact same webcast. What's the vision of success? And then we'll have a poll question up here to see if you've convinced people to your point of view. We've got all six regions and who's going to dominate the next decade. But Marcelo, why don't you start in terms of just what's the soundbite we should be left with in terms of both South America and Bogota?
There's a lot of opportunities. Innovation is defined a bit differently. So what's innovative in other countries, in other parts of the world, was before is now innovation here. So there's a lot of opportunities to adapt innovations to our economies, and those innovations, online learning and education, bio-based businesses, fintech and probably creative industries, which is a big bet, at least in Colombia. That's going to be the future in the next 5 years.
Great. Brian, biggest prediction and blockchain's value in 2023, go right now.
I don't know that, but I think my biggest prediction is that the successful companies in the next 5 years will put an active focus on innovation and talent as their core competency. So how do they create systems in place to create innovation as a competency focused on individual talent within organizations?
Nice. All right. And Eric, bring us home on this one. What's your thought?
So I believe that Africa is going to produce some of the biggest technologies in the 21st century. And we also believe that Africa will be the largest marketplace for global technology.
Nice.
And I have a comment also, just in terms of, it's not a commercial, but it's going to sound like one. I wanted to go back to something that Marcela said about the fact that she's coming to visit Silicon Valley and bringing people as well. And we at Future Proofing Next, you know, Sean and I love to be able to host those kinds of things because it's these great exchanges. And to me, even so far, before we close out the webcast today, these kinds of conversations, these kinds of insights that we have in terms of what's happening quickly, it's what keeps us, you know, the Sean and Andrea team, also on our toes, because it's really easy to be complacent with the trends that were important even 6 months ago. And, you know, every election, every change, every newspaper headline, there's a shift that occurs that can be really, you know, rocking the world. And so we are inviting other people to come and interact with us. We love that. Okay, back to you, Sean.
All right, three things to close this out real quick. One, we did ask this question. I don't know if we can show the poll results, Joanne, but which region will dominate? there's a stuffing of the ballot box, although I think we're getting late into people's hours. So I don't know if you want to quantitatively take that to the bank, Eric. Couple other things. Want to thank all three of the panelists, and I'll give you the highest form of compliment because you represented your regions quite well, but in your talking, you're quite worldly and cosmopolitan in your focus. So I think even though I asked you to champion a region, I think the innovators of tomorrow are going to be very worldly and focused. And I think you guys know not only what's happening in your region, but what's happening outside. So my highest form of compliment, thank you. I will send you a questions afterward. Maybe we'll actually have a more fulsome response on some of these questions that we had to zip through. We have a schedule of webinars coming up. These are the next three, Leading Innovation, 52 Business Models, where we rank the best business models. And myself and Andrew are spending the next 2 days huddled together in Silicon Valley in a room writing our next book. So we'll be releasing at least some of the little teasers of it on October 22nd. So thank you so much. We will be back obviously next month, and we will be posting all of these things online at futureproofingnext.com. Including this webcast today. So thank you, panel. Thank you, Andrea. Thank you, Joanne. And we'll be seeing you in the future.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you all. Thanks, everyone.
See you soon, Marcella.
See you soon.
Bye. See you soon. Bye-bye. Bye.